Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Please make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened, your tray table is in an upright and locked position, and that you are ready to get weird and think different. Please prepare for takeoff. Is Wednesday. It is September 15th, and we are back with another episode of Destination Different. We're closing in here on the final 3 months of 2022. If you remember, if you've been following along with the podcast for a while now, you will recall that at the start of the year, I set a few goals for the podcast. So I've spent some time over the last couple weeks reviewing them, looking at them. Am I going to make it? Am I going to hit these things? Some, I'm trending right along. I'm tracking. Others could probably use some work. The biggest of them all, I set out the goal of hitting 10,000 total downloads for the podcast by the end of 2022. After this episode comes out, I should hit the 7,000 number, which means, if my math is correct, I've got 3 months and change to do 3,000 listens. Can it be done? Absolutely. Is it going to be difficult? Absolutely. I don't think I've hit an 1,000 listen month in the history of the podcast. I think the biggest month of listens was like 600, 650, somewhere in there. So in order to do that, I would need to do some pretty significant damage in the next 3 months. But I'm sure it's all going to try. I think we can push on this thing. And just by the grace of God, we're getting to 10,000. We're hitting that goal by the end of the year. So that is my mission. If you haven't already, I need you to go in, share the podcast with somebody, leave a review for the podcast. Do what you got to do to make sure that we hit 10,000 listens by the end of the year. And the way that we're probably going to get to that number is by having great guests on the show. And so we got a good one this week, a very, very good one this week. His name is Alex Dragovich. He is a former Division I basketball player at Notre Dame and Boston College. He is now a rising star in the stand-up comedy world in the city of Chicago, born and raised in the suburbs of Chicago. Got his comedy fix in college, you know, started joining a sketch writing group that led him into starting to do some stand-up. He has since then, you know, just dove all into the stand-up world, works a day job during the day, and then spends somewhere between 6 and 7 nights a week performing, being on stage, writing sketches, doing bits, and we talked all things comedy. He's now, you know, been in the comedy circuit for 6 years. He said 6 years in this past July, he's been out doing stand-up. And he's now kind of, you know, a regular in multiple comedy clubs, from the Laugh Factory to, I believe it's called Zany's in Chicago. And he is just slowly chipping away at growing in the comedy space. So we talked all things, you know, what does it take to write a good joke? How do you crack into the circuit, and how many miserable gigs do you have to do before you actually get something a little bit steady? And what does it take to manage the finances of a comedian? You know, what does it pay to do what he does? And what is the grand vision of where he wants to take his career in the comedy space? So, awesome conversation. I don't think we've had a pure, true blood stand-up comedian on the podcast yet, and he was fascinating to see inside of that world of stand-up comedy. So without further ado, I want to kick it over to this week's episode of Destination Different with comedian Alex Dragovich. I hope you enjoy. Do you hate Doris Burke?
My mom does a little bit, but no, she was always, Doris Burke was always, Always really cool from the few interactions we had. And she has to, you know, she has to be hard on the players. I think that's what's something that like a lot of people like about her commentating. She's very candid and yeah, but my mom is not having that. My mom's not cool with it.
Well, I was going to
So
say in my research, you know, my research of you, I was like, we definitely have something in common because my mom, for some reason, has a bone to pick with Doris Burke as well. So I figured I had to ask that. She is like, whenever Doris Burke is on the call for a Celtics game, it is not good.
yeah, she really tear into people. But you know, when she tears into your son, I can see my mom being a little bit biased there.
So
So, yeah.
I like that. But so I guess staying on the topic of family. So you obviously, you know, played basketball growing up, and you've now moved into the comedy space. Like, how has your family been with kind of seeing, you know, your transition from athletics to the comedy space? And like, are they into it? Do they come to their shows? Do you actively hide your material from them? Like, you know, how has that been with you getting into comedy?
You know, they they think it's fine mostly. I don't think they have there. I don't think they want me to send them any clips anytime soon. We're Serbian, so that's just being funny is not like a trait of ours. Like, it's not something. It's a very serious, very. It's a very a lot of curmudgeon-y hill people, you know, who are very hardworking and bought into the idea and the American dream, you know, and there, a lot of Serbians are and do well, have done well for themselves. So the idea of comedy when like my grandma, you know, worked in the Ford factory just feels to them feels a little off. But they're not, they don't hate it.
Fair. Is there part of your comedy, you know, career? Is that, you know, could that be considered your version of the American dream, of you kind of chasing that as a career and a profession?
Yeah, it'd be tough to explain that to my parents, I suppose. But for me, yeah, yeah, to me, it's ever since I kind of realized that it's something that you could do, I haven't really had any second thoughts about it. But it really, you do start from nothing. There's very few that, you know, even though there is some nepotism, there's very few people that don't start literally just by going to an improv class or going to a stand-up open mic or even starting with 20 followers on Twitter. Like every comedian really does start with nothing. So that is kind of the American dream. You're making a pretty amazing point there.
Is it like, at what point did you kind of get your first taste of it, that you were like, oh, I think I'm into this? Like, were you watching comedians at, you know, growing up? I feel like I've interviewed a few comedians now, and they're like, you know, we're huge SNL fans or huge movie buffs. Like, was that kind of you growing up, and you always had a knack or an eye for comedy?
Yeah, I watched Last Comic Standing when I was like 10. I thought that was really cool. Just always tried to make my friends laugh too. I was just like annoying. I was trying to make people laugh all the time. It was just kind of always a part of it. And then obviously I'm watching funny movies and all that. Then in college I got into a sketch comedy group and at BC and those people be doing those shows really kind of changed a lot of things for me. It opened my eyes up a lot.
And like, at that point, you know, you're obviously what, 20, 21, 22. Were you thinking, hey, this could be a career for me? This is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Like, is that where your head was starting to go at that point, when once you got a taste of it?
Yeah, finally meeting people who are alumni of that group, who had gone on to write for television, stuff like that. Seeing that it was possible from people that had been in my group before was was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and then I think being in Boston kind of helped somehow. I think in Chicago there was this, there's this giant like Second City vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
Improv. And I didn't really want to do that. It was cool. It was cool to see that people were doing like stand-ups had come out of Boston. I think that was kind of mm-hmm. like visibly seeing that or understanding like, the history of that was you didn't really know about that in Chicago.
Yeah. And so like, were you, okay, so you're in college and are you starting to go to like open mics and you're actually, you know, outside of your sketch comedy group going and doing stand-up?
Senior year I did after I graduated. Like I was home. I was in Boston for an extra month because I had another month of my lease in my apartment and my stipend, like my student athlete stipend was mm-hmm. still going. So my mom was like, do you want to come home in like June? And I was like, no, I'm going to just live in Boston for a mm-hmm. month. I think I had like $1,000 left from the BC athlete money or whatever. Yeah. I was like, I'll just live in Boston. I'll just like,
yeah, I can run this for a while. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially at that time, it was like, I was like, I can just do what, yeah, I can live off of that easily. So, yeah, I stayed in Boston for an extra month and, actually with a couple other of my, the friends in my sketch group. So we would just like go to, I wasn't even looking for jobs yet. I was just so like, I want to do stand up.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'd wake up, screw around all day, watch TV, and then I'd go do like an open mic. And then we lived on Chestnut Hill Ave.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go to Mary Ann's on like Wednesday. It's on like a Wednesday in the middle of June and like no one would be there.
Yeah.
And we would just like drink and just be like this. It was a really cool, like it was just cool to be like I was like a comedian.
You're kind of like living the lifestyle a little bit.
Yeah, I was like, I could do this any day. You know, mm-hmm. I could do this forever, you know. Then I moved back to Chicago and got into it.
And like how, I mean, maybe they were fantastic, but how bad were your first sets? Like, do you remember some of those first bits that you were writing?
Yeah. My first set was so bad. I tried an open mic when I first moved to Boston and that set was so bad. I didn't do it for two more years. I didn't get back on stage for 2 years. I was so shook by it. And then the first set back, like senior year, the next set I did, that actually went well. And then it went bad again for mm-hmm. like a bunch of times. I remember I had a joke about, I think a lot of people have this joke, like the premise of like how there's like, like I saw a commercial for like that they only have like 2,000 tigers left in Bangladesh or something mm-hmm. like that. And I think like the idea of my joke was like, that's still, he's like, I bet the people in Bangladesh are probably like, hey, can you kill these tigers or something like that? isn't that like, who wants to like, if there was 2,000 tigers in Chicago, like
yeah.
we'd all, or if there was 2,000 tigers in Boston, we wouldn't be like, save the tigers. You
yeah.
know, I think it was something, I think that was like one of my first jokes, which is I'm glad I didn't keep it.
It didn't land necessarily.
It was, yeah, I think I was like, yeah, right, guys, tigers, don't you want to kill them? You know, people are like, it's crazy how when you start, there's such a, you just have a truly no idea how to get a joke across or mm-hmm. how to get a funny idea across or even how to write a joke.
And so, like, how does somebody even learn? I mean, I guess it's maybe you tell me, but like, how do you even get to that point where you can write a 2 minute set or 5 minute set or 10 minute set where you're baking jokes in there and like, you know, trying to get laughs at all times. And so like, how do you learn how to do that?
Or at least what was your process like to do that?
Yeah, I think, well, first off, when you're starting in open mics, you're with a lot of people who don't know how to do comedy either, usually. And if they do know how to do it, they're a couple of years in, and they're also probably pretty bad. So when you start, it's just you and like a bunch of other people, you know, probably 20 other people, you know, just trying to blurt stuff out and try to say whatever is on your mind. You eventually learn that you learn classic joke structure, eventually, like premise, setup, punch, and how to get to a punchline, how to tag up a joke, and how to keep it going longer. And so you learn joke structure, though, just by watching people and watching people do it the right way. So I usually, when people start their first couple of years, they're often like copying other comics. Mm-hmm. They're taking people's cadences. They're taking people's, the way people do it, because there's no other way to do it. You just have to. Mm-hmm. So you'll take an idea of yours and then just kind of funnel it through like another comic's comedic styling, because you don't know your own yet.
Right.
You know?
And like,
so you do that for a little bit. And
I was gonna say, like, how long, you know, you've now been doing it for coming up on a decade here. Like, was there ever a point where you hit and you're like, all right, I think I'm starting to figure this out a little bit, or like, I think I'm getting good at this. Like, could you like physically feel that transition happening?
I think getting good at this, probably not until like the last, like I became 6 years in July.
Mm-hmm.
6 years in, and I felt like I was getting pretty good. I think this being honest, I think being able to write jokes over quarantine,
mm-hmm.
and then have just like knowing that a few of them, or which ones I thought were probably going to work, you know,
mm-hmm.
Probably this spring, honestly, where I'm like, I'm getting better than I thought. It takes a while. Cause like you think sometimes, I think you think 2-3 years in, you have an idea. But no, just, I can confidently, like, I'm all right at this. Just this last year, I'm all right at this.
Yeah.
It's such a humbling thing, man. Like it's so brutal sometimes. So you're just, you're always constantly, you're never like really safe, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know if it was on another podcast or an interview or something, you said that like the life of a comedian is terrible. Like what do you mean by that? Is it truly just like, you know, constantly like workshopping new stuff? Like what about the life is terrible? And do you really mean that?
So yeah, I wish I could recall when I said that. I guess if the life of a, it's terrible, in the sense that you've really got the energy. I mean, your nights are never free.
Mm-hmm.
And why the life of a comedian is terrible. I wish I had the context for that.
I wish I did too.
But it is, because I do, because I like genuinely, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love doing it. I get up as much as I can. I get up all the time. But it's definitely not the healthiest. Maybe mm-hmm. that's what I mean. You're just, especially when you start getting, you know, paid a little bit, if at all, to do this shit, man, there's a, you're just like, you know, you get there and the club is, they serve chicken tenders,
mm-hmm.
and, that's what you're eating all weekend, or you're doing it, you're playing a mall, or you're playing a bar, or you're playing a comedy club. And none of those places, legitimately, I haven't seen one salad or a salad that seemed, you know, there's no vegetables. There's no, so you're just like, and then drinks are always free. Mm-hmm. You basically drink for free on this. That's probably one perk. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is like that drinking is not good for you. So you're drinking, it's crazy, man. You're just like, I'll go out with friends, you know, mm-hmm. on like a Friday night after a show, I'll meet up with some friends after a show, and a buddy will just be like, man, I need a drink, had a long week. And you know, you're just like, man, I've been drinking.
Yeah. You're like, the last thing I need is a drink.
I need a water so bad. So yeah, it's an opposite life. Yeah, some people, mm-hmm. like a lot of people get to go home and they get to work, get a good workout in, be in bed by 9:30, 10, wake up, have a really productive day at work. And you know, their body's in a good rhythm. Mm-hmm. but it's not, you know, when you're comic, man, it's you can get out of the show by like 10 or 11 or, mm-hmm. or yeah, 11, you can get out, but it's just hard. It's kind of hard on the body doing mm-hmm. nights, man. It's a night shift.
How do you like build your schedule? So are you handpicking, I'm going to go to this show and this show and this show? Are people calling you up? Like, do you sort of have some sort of structure on a weekly basis maybe, or is it like totally random?
Oh yeah. I've got like my dates booked out until like, you know, through November, December, through the year already. So, yeah. So, you know, that's, yes. Eventually, you know, when you start doing, I guess there's a long-winded way of saying it, but you know, when people see you do well and when you can book your own stuff, but yeah, it starts out with, I'll do the long way.
Give me the long one. We got time.
Yeah. You start out doing open mics, and then people see you at the mics. If you do well, then you get asked to do bar shows. And if you do well in the bar shows, some of those people might take you on the road to do like one-nighters or for a weekend at a comedy club. Sometimes you're just like playing at some hotel, some like Radisson convention mm-hmm. area. And so then from there, then you can start working the clubs a little bit too. You start getting in locally or throughout the Midwest if you can. People usually got to take you there.
When you say people got to take you, like that somebody who runs a comedy club, like who is that person that's
usually
bringing you out there?
Usually a guy who's worked that club before is trying to get you in, start you out on like a host spot or a guest spot.
Mm-hmm.
And if that club booker likes you, then you get to come back.
Got it.
And yeah, it's a lot of comics helping comics early on. People running their own rooms and the people that have been doing it longer who know the comedy club bookers will get you in touch with them. And then once you're in at the clubs, you know, so like, you know, Laugh Factory, once you become like a paid regular there, then you're, you know, working there, you know, you know, every week,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Zany's, you're there, you know, every other month sometimes, or you do a weekend. They have dropouts, or you're doing guest spots, and the comedy bar is the same way. So it's a very, it's a long process, but then eventually it's like, you just look up and like, you got a schedule, you know? Mm. But it is slow with the first couple of years.
So you're really like those first couple of years, you're taking any opportunity you can to get up on stage pretty much.
Oh yeah. It's just, yeah, it's embarrassing. you're getting up at every stupid open mic and every, you know, like worthless bar show that you can. And you're trying to get better. You're trying to find, trying to figure out how you want to do this. And then once you start getting booked regularly,
mm-hmm.
once you start in figuring out how you want to do this, it gets easier to build time. and then to to build time and to like to develop your act.
Yeah. I always like asking creative people about this, but like, tell me a little bit about like the finances of how you've been able to do this. Cause I imagine obviously, especially in those early days when you're just like hopping from bar to bar, maybe you're just getting paid in free drinks. I don't know if they're like throwing you a couple bucks at the end of the night. Like, is it tips? Like, how does that work? And then obviously now as you've progressed and you have these more regular shows, are they paying you a salary? Do you have like a fixed rate for, you know, you doing a 30-minute set? Like, how does the finances of being a comedian work?
Yeah, those are still, I still do shows for free sometimes. I mean, all the time, especially mm-hmm. during the week. Most, you know, open mics obviously don't pay. Mm-hmm. But most bar shows should and do pay, plus free drinks, and the comedy clubs do pay. The comedy clubs have a set rate. Each club is a little different, but most clubs have a set rate that's actually a little bit outdated and needs to be upgraded. So once you start getting in the clubs, then you start seeing, and once you start getting on the road is where you can kind of negotiate your price and set a price for yourself and for especially for how much time you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, so the road is a good, that's where in terms of the finances, you start to see a little bit of money at this when you get into the clubs and you get on the road more so. And then there are some, I work at an independent theater called the Lincoln Lodge, and that pays too. That they have a set, they pay like a comedy club.
Got it. Okay. And have you always been doing just like, you know, since you've graduated, like exclusively comedy? Do you work other jobs to sort of supplement, you know, doing comedy? How have you sort of handled that over the years?
Yeah, I've held down a day job still the last 5-6 years. Once comedy like started paying my rent, I thought about it, but it didn't. But I don't think it's quite enough to jump ship. So I'm going to keep, it's not, my day job, they kind of know that I do this and it's a very convenient, situation for me. It's not killing me.
Right. That's good. So you can kind of take the paycheck from there and put it towards your time of doing the comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're cool with it. As long as I don't, if I start demanding promotions and want to like have my own team or something like that, they might be like, well, you're going to have a little more responsibility.
Yeah.
But yeah, like they're really cool with me taking my Fridays to do the road and to, and now working from home, it's been a great gig.
That's awesome. I want to hear a little bit about like how you sort of build your material and like what your writing process looks like. Cause obviously you said that during COVID you've been able to like kind of work on some new jokes, work on some new material. So how does that go for you? Like, where do you draw inspiration from? Like, how does that process go to build out a stand-up act?
I just write in this, I have side office in my apartment here. It's like a small, tiny room with a couple of bookshelves. And I just kind of write on my computer or I write on a notepad. I go through like some of the ideas that I've been having. You have a much better idea of how to write something the longer you've been doing it. So when you think that if I think I've got something that's like interesting, like a premise that's interesting, I might just try to see, I might just try to talk out ways where I can kind of execute a punchline for that. And a lot of it's just kind of talking out loud to myself, you know? You know, it can be stemming from things of like just ideas I had from, like, I was at a party, this happened, that was kind of stupid, I said this, somebody said that, and you're just kind of like, oh, well, what if, da-da-da. So you're just kind of like talking to yourself a little bit. That's, at least that's how I do it.
Yeah.
Some people write in coffee shops. I can't really do that. I have to like talk out my stuff, and then it's a, it sometimes it comes into fruition. A lot of, it's just a lot of bad stuff too, but I've got a better idea now of like how to, you know, I can write, you know, this is like the one of the first years of doing this where I can like set a goal. I can like write 5 jokes in an hour and be like, well, that's,
right, you know, I've got something there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's whereas like before you're just kind of like toiling around, like, what the fuck am I doing? You
yeah.
know, like, how do I make anything funny? So yeah, you have to, it takes a while, man, but yeah, now I just kind of sit in my room and talk to myself like a fucking
crazy person. That's not creepy at all.
Yeah. If you walked in on me, it would look weird, but, yeah, so I sit in here and I get to write a good amount.
Okay. And are there things, I mean, that you write down and you're like, this sounds great on paper, this is going to kill, and you get up on stage and you say it out loud and you're like, this is not it. Like, how often does that happen?
All the time. All the time. You know, sometimes I just think I'm funnier than I am, man. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes something makes you chuckle, and I mean, it truly happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I did a new joke last night that really ate it, and you just gotta, that's part of it. You know, you write, you know, musicians can like write their albums in a studio, and comedians have to write in front of people, you know. We have to get it. We have to have a feedback loop, you know, to know if it's good or not.
Are there any like notable bombs in your career that you're like, that particularly stand out, where you're like, I just absolutely sucked that night, or the crowd was ruthless? Anything that like really stands out?
Yeah, man. How much time do you have? it's a bunch. I was opening for this guy at Zany's, and there's like a comedy night at this golf course in like Brookfield, Bolingbrook. There's a comedy night in Bolingbrook.
Okay.
And it paid well too, so I was like, okay, I can go do that. And it was at this country club, and it's probably like 25 people. The guy, when I got there, said it was a light room, lighter than usual, which they always say. They're always like, it's lighter. We usually get one. No, you don't.
Yeah.
What you get. Like, I don't give a shit, dude. You know, you know, no one in the crowd was under 60. I can guarantee that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just done 2 feature weekends too. So I've been on the road. Like my 30 was tight and good. And I really don't think I got a laugh for 30. I got lit early too. They lit me early. And, the jokes were just like, I was just telling them to the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy. I hadn't bombed that hard. And I haven't bombed that hard in a couple years, especially for a lot. That would have been a bad bomb if I did 5 minutes, dude. Mm-hmm. I did like 30
minutes of just crickets.
Of nothing. And it's weird to feel that, but it was they're just staring at you, and you're like, okay, well,
I'm paid for 30 minutes here. I'm going to just keep going.
Yeah. I'm just going to, you know, you guys, if anyone wants to talk about anything, please let's hash it out, you know. But yeah, it was a brutal.
I have like 2 questions coming off of that. Like, one,
I'm going to switch chairs here. This chair stinks, dude.
Oh, good. Sorry. Oh, good.
My buddy just got a new chair, and it's really not working for me. Okay. Sorry about that.
No, all good. My two questions are like, one, do you ever play sort of to the room that you're in? So if you like walk into a place and it's like, all right, these are, I'm going into a nursing home and these are all 75-year-old ladies. Like, will you change up your act? Or are you like, you're running your act, like this is my set and I'm going to run my set no matter who's sitting out there?
So it depends on time of day sometimes too. So like, for like an early, so like, let's say if I'm doing a weekend and like the Saturday early show, the crowd is usually a little bit older. Mm-hmm. They want to hear some more wholesome stuff, maybe take sex out of it, you know, mm-hmm. Or at least do it later in the set. So they warm up to you a little bit. That's how you got to read them. And there's also time, there's also places too. So it's like, you know, if you're playing a brewery in like Logan Square, which is like, if you're like in a trendy neighborhood and you're playing a brewery, it's better to kind of, you know, it's better to do some jokes that are a little bit more like, not, I don't want to say interesting, but like maybe a little bit more, not your most broad stuff. Cause you got broad jokes for like the clubs.
Yeah.
You know? So like, to like make the, like a suburban mom laugh and you have jokes to make a college kid with blue hair laugh. You know, those are things you have to read. Like if you're developing a club act.
Yeah.
And then you go to like some cool trendy room where they, you know, they don't want to hear a joke about like, I don't know, Subway or some shit, you know? So that's, yeah, I do. And that's the thing. So sometimes you do just, but I don't like, I've developed jokes because I thought certain things were funny, but sometimes you kind of have to pick from your act. And be like, okay, well, this joke will work here. This show could work here, but more often than not, I try to be able to play for anybody, you know? So yeah, I hope that answers that.
No, that's interesting. I'm always curious that, like, you know, I imagine you play in such like a hodgepodge of different places that, like, if you have to change up for depending on who you're playing, like where is maybe the strangest place that you've ever done a gig? Like, I feel like I've heard of comedians, they're doing shows in strip clubs or they're doing shows in the basement of a shopping mall. Like, where's the strangest gig you've ever done?
I did a gig, let's see, the strangest, man. God, there's so many, man. There's really so many places that comedy should not be allowed in, you know? It's like you play, I'm trying to think of the one place that was strange was, I did a bar show in Wisconsin. It was like a one-nighter room in Wisconsin and the lady didn't turn the music off in the bar. And the bar was like an island bar. So she gave my buddy the microphone and was like, she goes, go in the bar, just like go into the island.
You're like in the middle of the horseshoe kind of thing.
Yeah. Cause we were like, where's the stage? You know, she's like, oh no, just like go in like the island and just like start talking to people. We were like, what are you? No. We're doing like stand-up comedy. She's like, yeah, like here's the mic and just like watch out for the bartender and like, you know, we'll just start doing your act. And we're just like, well, do they know there's a show? She's like, yeah, we do this once a month. And they didn't know. Nobody knew. So we just like,
you're like, who is this crazy guy probably drunk off his ass behind the bar?
Yeah, I also did. Yeah, so we did that and no one was even looking at us. They weren't even, not only were they not laughing, they were like trying to like avoid eye contact because they're like, this is the weirdest thing. And then I did a bank once when I was like 3 years in, it's like a bank had some, a bank had a, they had some like half year conference thing, mm-hmm. party. And I was 3 years in and didn't, they were like, can you work clean? And I was like, yeah, but I couldn't, I didn't have any clean material really. It was so brutal. It was so bad. These bankers, man, it was like in Champaign, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Weird place. I played a bank. I played that. That was just like a weird circumstance.
How do you even get a bank? Like, how does somebody even find you to book you to play their bank gig?
Sometimes people will call or email like a comedy club booker,
mm-hmm.
and then he'll recommend.
Got it. Okay.
People. And then, yeah, I'm trying to think of like, now you got me thinking like, what's like the weirdest, cause like sometimes venues are, they are truly, but they're often in like a side room of like a bar or something like mm-hmm. that. But yeah. In terms of the weird, oh, we did quarantine, we did like outdoor stuff, and that mm-hmm. was just, that was like, that was horrible.
Yeah,
some of them didn't have a mic,
so you're just yelling,
you're just like yelling at people in a field. That was like really bad. Yeah, so yelling at people in a field. I've played nursing homes. I played a, the weirdest one, but it was actually amazing, was I played a rehab center.
Mm.
And I played a rehab center, and I can't believe my first joke. I just like walked on stage, and I was like, this is cool to be here. I just went to the bathroom. I'm honestly surprised you guys have like locks on the doors. They didn't like it. They didn't like,
they didn't like that joke.
But I was like, yeah, hey, because you guys are addicts, right? No, but I didn't say that, but it was actually being an awesome show. I shouldn't have said, I can't believe you guys have locks on the doors, but I was very confident. And
they warmed up to you after that?
They were awesome. But I shouldn't have made fun of their addictions. But yeah, that, the rehab center was just weird because you're walking around like a legitimate.
Yeah.
It was a like legit.
That's crazy.
Medical. Like it was crazy. But yeah. They were so cool.
How do you pick like kind of off of that? Like, how do you pick in your work? Like what crosses the line, what doesn't cross the line? Like, do you set sort of your own like scale? Like how do you sort of toe that line, obviously in today's world where there's a lot more probably sensitivity than there has been in the past?
You know, usually you have a great idea and you can just send your friends jokes. I'm like, hey, this joke, doing these jokes over the top, because now it's like you can like write a joke on paper and it's structurally there enough. You know,
mm-hmm.
rarely now, like a first, like a year or two in, again, your friends have no idea. You guys just don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know? But now I can just like send a joke to a friend and they'll be like, oh, yeah, that's funny. Or they'll mm-hmm. be like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, you can do that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I usually message my friends, like some trusted.
Yeah. Give me a gut check on this. See how it is.
Yeah. You never want to, you know. You never want to, but sometimes that stuff that works, man,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes people love that stuff. Like when you cross the line, sometimes you'll go to a show and the booker will be like, the dirtier, the better. These people are fucking monsters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, sure.
Yeah. Like, I guess so, man. You know, that's, and they do.
Yeah.
Know?
Interesting.
Sometimes, sometimes they want you to like make fun of their friends or whatever, but
mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you do a lot of that where you'll like interact with a crowd and sort of engage the heckler or bring people into your act from in the audience?
If that's what they, you know, I just usually it's to get them back to just listening. Sometimes they're so talkative that you have to talk to them, mm-hmm. but I'm more of a joke. I'm not a crowd work guy. I'm more of a joke writer, and I'd rather just be up there working on my stuff than having to be like making fun of someone's job.
Right.
You know, that shit's kind of lame to me sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? 'Cause you see comics go on stage and they're just like, you know, are you two dating? And it's like, who cares, man?
Mm-hmm.
They don't, who gives a shit
right.
if they're dating, you know, but you have to, sometimes you have to do that
to get them engaged.
Yeah. And to, especially if you're hosting, then that's a different,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So I know you've done some stuff like obviously outside of the stand-up world. So you've, you know, produced some sketches. I think you did even some like acting work. Like, how do you think about that as you're building your stand-up career? Like, is that something you want to get more into? Is writing for TV or writing sketches or, you know, working in that space, like producing, you know, how are you thinking about that part of the comedy space world?
Yeah, I made the sketches the last year to hopefully beef up some type of resume or, you know, just to prove that I can write dialogue
mm-hmm.
in that for that medium. I thought putting out sketches that are like in my voice like that was a good way just to kind of mix things up a bit. And then I wrote a pilot. So you kind of have to have, being a hand in a writer's room would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a great gig to write. That'd be kind of the dream to like write during the week and then, go on the road and do stand up. That would be the dream for sure.
Okay. So that's like, I always am curious, like, you know, what is sort of the next step? And that would be to continue, you don't want to give up the stand-up, but you'd love to have something like still in the writing space to supplement that.
And that's the issue. And that's kind of the interesting part of it is it's like, if you want to write, going to LA is probably the better thing, but the stand-up there is so bad and barren.
Hmm.
You know, there's not a lot of a stage time out there, even if you're amazing. So
why is that?
I'm not sure, but it's kind of hard. It's harder to get around there.
Mm-hmm.
New York City, you can get up like three times, four times in a night, mm-hmm. you know, Chicago, you can get up two or three times in a night if you want pretty easily. And, it's just easy. You can, you know, the spots are 8 minutes away
mm-hmm.
in LA. Everything's like a half hour,
right.
45 minutes away. So like once you choose a destination, you're kind of committed to that. It seems like.
Yeah. Is there anybody in the comedy world or in the writing world that you would just be dying to work with that like is an inspiration to you or somebody that you admire that you would love to either open for or go on the road with or write on their show? Like anybody that stands out?
I would love to open. I'd love to open for Soder, for Dan Soder.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Michael. As somebody, he has an HBO special. I'd really like to just open for him or just talk with him. He's amazing. Them too. Those two are probably the two best in the game, in my opinion. Love to open for Joe List too, if I could. So yeah, those three guys are just awesome. Making in terms of like, you know, making stuff, you know, that would be. You know, I would love for Colbert to hire me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. Yeah, who to collaborate with? But they're usually the people in Chicago that I work on stuff with are great. And
mm-hmm.
Those are the comics I want to work with.
I like that. How do you feel like the internet has changed the way that people sort of think about comedy? Because it's like the lines are blurring now between television and stand-up and Twitter and TikTok. And there's kind of like this overlap of, you know, funny people all over the place. Like, how do you sort of think about the, you know, leveraging the power of the internet to your advantage?
It's interesting in terms of just like the internet's relationship with comedy now. It's a, you know, my buddy just did a show and he said someone came up to him after and was like, "Hey, that joke's not yours. Like, I saw a meme about that." And he was like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah.
You know, it's like, he's like, no, it's, he's just taking the time to say why his joke is different from a meme just feels crazy. So that's an era that we're in now, but it is a great, it is great that you can get your stuff out there and to a wider audience. You don't have to go through any parts of the industry, really. You know, Comedy Central is putting out some shorter comedy sets coming up here in the next couple of weeks. But there are people who have sets on YouTube that'll compete with those views, you know? So I think that's like, it's kind of like leveling the playing field with the industry, and people are making their own opportunities, which is great. It's great to see. It's, but also seeing the, you know, the, there's like this now the new push for content creation is like at a crazy high speed. You'll often hear people say stuff like, "It doesn't matter if it's good, man, just like put it out." And you're like, that sounds so stupid, but it's true. It's true. So yeah, it's, but it's good. It's good to, be able to reach people online, even though.
Yeah. Like, how do you think about it for yourself? Like, are you, you know, you're fairly active on Twitter, like on Instagram, kind of posting some of your sketches and stuff. Like, are you actively building a plan of like, I need to tweet every day and I need to get my jokes out on Twitter, or I need to, you know, be making a sketch every week to share out? Like, is that, how are you thinking about using social media for your comedy?
Yeah, I'd like to be less embarrassed, but it's so embarrassing. So I think the people who don't have the shame are, can win at this, but it feels like you make something and you're just like, oh man, I don't know if I should put this out or whatever. So I am putting out stuff when I think it's good right now, and I probably should just, I've not put stuff out that I think are just good because I don't think they're good enough. I think this step is being able to put myself out there without caring what other people think as much is probably another step, because there's a lot of the people in that, in across the media platforms, you know, that don't seem to care.
Well, it's so, it's interesting. Cause I'm like, you get up on stage every single night pretty much, and seemingly don't necessarily care what those people think. But then, you know, the internet is like a different beast of people, you know, these crazies from out in just the ether that are.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Cause usually you're doing your act. That is a good point. It feels weird to put in that relationship, though, especially like putting up stand-up clips or it does feel weird just like filming yourself like talking straight into a camera, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's not the relationship you have with the audience in stand-up.
Right.
But posting clips, I get that. Posting sketches, I get that. But yeah, sometimes, because usually it's a finished product too. Because sometimes with stand up, you're like, oh, I'm working on some new stuff. I guess the audience doesn't know that it's new. They don't know it's new. But yeah, when you're putting something out on the internet, usually you want it to be refined. But I never thought about that, where it's like, oh yeah, don't you like not give a shit to just go in front of people. Maybe just because doing it for so long that getting into that, getting into the content game feels, it just feels weird.
Yeah. Maybe there's like, you have the physical like relationship with somebody in person versus it's like kind of ambiguous fans or viewers on the internet. I don't know.
Well, yeah, because it feels like you're putting, when you send, click send, it feels like you're putting it out to nothing still.
Yeah.
When I'm trying to do something funny online, you're just by yourself.
Yeah.
But that's true. It's a different age.
It's interesting. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to your, I mean, not coming off your bat, like being a basketball player, do you watch game film of, in a sense of yourself? Like, do you watch your sets back and kind of see what you could have done? Like, how do you treat that of recording?
I listen to them a lot.
Okay.
I listen to my sets quite a bit just to, yeah, just kind of see, watch myself on stage and, just to see how I'm getting a joke off and stuff like that. But recording the sets is really, really important.
Yeah.
So you know how you're doing for sure.
Okay. I don't want to keep you too long here. So my kind of last question, I end every show with the sign off of stay weird on this podcast. So I've been asking everybody what makes you weird?
What makes me weird? What makes me weird? Where to start? Do you know what I've been eating lately?
I don't.
Do you know? I'll tell you this. I've been, sometimes I eat, I still will get, my grandma growing up, she used to get us the Gerber baby banana food, or the Gerber baby baby food.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this Gerber baby thing that came in banana flavor. It was baby food. It came in like the cartridge. I was like this big. My grandma, she got us that baby food as like a pudding dessert through while I was in high school. We ate baby food, right? And then I stopped eating in college. And I started eating it again. It's really, really good. So I buy baby food for no babies for me. I've been buying it like last couple weeks and it's fucking amazing. That's something that's like a little weird that I've been doing. I eat baby food like 2 or 3 times a week the last couple of weeks.
Is it a dessert? Is it a snack? Like
100% a dessert, dude. Okay. It's fucking phenomenal. It's phenomenal. The Gerber baby banana food.
I have to get my hands flavored. On this.
I can't believe I just said that out loud. I sound like a crazy person, but it's really fucking good.
Is a wrap on this week's episode of Destination Different. I gotta get my hands on some banana baby food, is what I learned from that podcast. So huge thanks to Alex for coming on the show. I've always had an interest in comedy. I've always had an interest in comedians. It just seems like, and writers, like it just seems like such an interesting, difficult thing to crack into, and their brains are so unique and so different than anybody else on earth. It seems like it can be the loneliest thing and also the most rewarding thing at the same time. And there's something fascinating about being a stand-up comic. So awesome interview with Alex. If you want to check him out, I'll make sure we get everything linked up in the description of the show. But I believe he's at Alex Drag on Instagram and at Alex Drag _ on Twitter. So we'll get those linked up so you can follow along with where his shows are at, some of his jokes on the internet, his sketches, and you can follow along with what Alex is doing. We're coming up on episode 100. I believe this marks episode 97 today of Destination Different. 97 episodes, which means we are just a mere 3 weeks away from episode 100.
I'm trying to get a giveaway going with some old goodies from some of my former guests, so stay tuned for that. I'm also trying to land one of my white whales. I don't want to spoil anything, but trying to get a big fish on the pod for episode 100. If you have any guests that you think would be interesting, that you think would have the weird brain to talk to me and be on this podcast, please send them my way. I'd love the chance to talk to them. That is all we got for this week. We'll be back again next week, next Wednesday, with another episode of Destination Different, number 98 of all time, in the push for 10,000 listens. All these things are happening. It's going to be a push to the finish line. So come on back next week for another episode. And until then, stay weird.
Superpowers. We fell in love for just a couple hours. I can't tell the difference between what's fake and what's been missing. Often I'm misunderstood, so I'm looking for a better me. This is your love song, baby. I hope that you know the words. This is your love song, baby. Should take time.